This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by You Build It. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, producer Tom, push that button.
What's trending? National.
Oh, a whole bunch of controversies over the weekend after Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide when all of us thought that he was on suicide watch. Now, it turns out he was not. And now he's dead, and people are asking questions. Was this a suicide or was this a murder? Because he was connected to a lot of very important and very powerful folks. Attorney General Bill Barr this morning said that there were some very serious irregularities with the prison. And as a consequence, he's going to investigate.
I was appalled, and indeed the whole department was, and frankly, angry, to learn of the MCC's failure to adequately secure this prisoner. We are now learning of serious irregularities at this facility that are deeply concerning and demand a thorough investigation. The FBI and the Office of Inspector General are doing just that. We will get to the bottom of what happened, and there will be accountability. But let me assure you that this case will continue on against anyone who was complicit with Epstein. Any co-conspirators should not rest easy. The victims deserve justice, and they will get it.
And that, in a lot of ways, what this is truly about. You have actual victims of his. People who were exploited for sexual deviant purposes. Girls, young girls, who don't get to see him go through a trial and be found guilty. They lost that. That was taken away from him. Now, he had a lot of dirt on a lot of very influential people. So over the weekend, people read into this. They said it was a murder. Some thought he was going to turn on Bill Clinton, so they said Bill Clinton's team probably had him killed. Others thought he was going to turn on Donald Trump, so people said Trump got him killed. Bill Clinton and Donald Trump both had some kind of working relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. Lots of important and influential and rich people did because he was an important and influential and rich dude, and they fly in the same circles. Having a relationship with Jeffrey Epstein, whether it's Bill Clinton or Donald Trump, doesn't mean anything. Does not mean anything that they used his plane, ever. That literally means nothing. Now, if you want to go ahead and presume the worst, okay, I suppose you can presume the worst, because this is certainly suspicious, and it is rife with the opportunity to present a whole bunch of conspiracy theories. Unfortunately, the president decided to forward a conspiracy theory via retweeting a claim that implied Bill Clinton was responsible for this. ABC's George Stephanopoulos talks about that.
There's also a lot of conspiracy theories online. One propagated by President Trump himself. He retweeted a tweet that seemed to suggest that Bill Clinton was somehow complicit in the death of Jeffrey Epstein. It shouldn't go without remarking. Kind of stunning that a president of the United States is accusing his predecessor, one of his predecessors, of complicity in murder. And the fact is, Tom Yamas, you spent a lot of time looking at the Jeffrey Epstein case. He had relationships both with Bill Clinton and Donald Trump.
So it was disturbing that the president did it. Yet I didn't hear much about how the media and lawmakers on the left were claiming that Trump was responsible. In fact, on MSNBC, Joy Reid said this.
The investigation of Epstein's death now falls into the hands of William Barr, Donald Trump's consigliere and attorney general, who refused to recuse himself on the Epstein case despite his association with a law firm once involved with Epstein, whose father once hired Jeffrey Epstein as a teacher with neither experience nor degree.
Oh my God.
Prime directive is to protect Donald Trump, no matter what.
Okay, so Donald Trump got someone to kill Jeffrey Epstein, and Bill Barr knows about it, and so Bill Barr is going to protect him. Okay, it's all silly. My representative, Gail Tarleton, Democrat from Seattle, she tweeted that, Barr, did you set this up to protect Trump? These people are crazy. Folks on the left, folks on the right, the ones who aren't posting memes about this, because there are some funny memes. My favorite meme was a picture of the suspect who visited Jeffrey Epstein before the suicide was Hillary Clinton, but with a mustache. Like that, okay, it's that's funny. But there are people who are legitimately pursuing this toxic nonsense. I certainly submit there is some suspicious behavior here, but that doesn't mean there's this massive conspiracy. Maybe it just means a guy who wanted to kill himself because he realized he was going to spend the rest of his life behind bars, which is not something this billionaire is accustomed to, ended up taking the cowardly way out and just killing himself. Maybe someone made it easier for him to do it by not watching him while he did it and not intervening. Maybe. We'll find that out. But this idea that the president ordered this or that Bill Clinton ordered this, come on. Guys, let's just move on. Let's wait for some facts before we get involved in this. I know, shocking that we might want to wait for some facts, but that's what I'm going to do. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The homelessness crisis.
So over a dozen homeless people were swept from the Ballard Commons Park. They're doing this, the city, to attempt to bring residents back to the park. We're paying a lot of money for these parks. We're expecting that we have access to these parks. Families just want to bring their kids there, but they've realized how dangerous it can be, how disgusting it can be. Here are two neighbors who live right by Ballard Commons Park talking with Como TV.
It's unsightly. It doesn't seem to be any long-term plan.
During the summer, it's a constant. People rotating through and the garbage and the sleeping bags. I get it. It's like, you know, you feel sorry for these people. They don't have better options. But at the same time, you get the sense like the city's becoming a doormat.
They are kind of becoming a doormat because we're letting it. In this case, at least, city crews cleared away these encampments. They, of course, offered them advance notice, offered them a place to go. What generally happens is they pretend they didn't get the notice, then act shocked when they're swept, and then they say no to the offer of an actual shelter bed. They say no. They're either waiting for something better like a tiny home village, or they're choosing to continue to live out on the streets because that's what they want to do. But now they've swept. They've swept the park because, as Barry Rallis says, these parks should be safe for everybody, including her and her family.
Parks are important to me just to have a place, a safe place to bring my kid and for us to be a part of the community. As a parent, I want everyone to feel safe, and I think the park could be for everybody.
It could be for everybody if you want to be a functioning member of society. If you choose not to, then it's not for you. I'm sorry, that's where you want to live. You don't get to live where you want. I'm sorry, but that's the reality of the situation. We will offer people who are homeless as many resources as we can. If you're saying no, that's on you, and I no longer care as much. Now I care more about the people who just want to enjoy that park with their kid, who just want to be able to go on a nice walk with their kid or their dog and not to encounter someone who's angry, someone who's drunk, someone who's dealing potentially with a mental illness, someone who has access potentially to a weapon, hanging out in a park. Now, as a result of all of this, the city, I guess, is providing something there. Either Como's referring to it as a concierge or the city is. It's basically a concierge of sorts, I suppose. It's a city worker who's going to work there from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. and they're there to answer questions about using the park, but most importantly, it would appear, to mediate problems between homeless people and residents. That's how bad things have gotten at some of our parks. We're now hiring people to mediate between people who are living out on the streets in camps on our parks with taxpayers. That's not a good place to be. Now, I saw some folks on Twitter imply that this is somehow racist or classist. A blogger that is a pathetic blogger was making this point on Twitter today. That, hey, would this happen in South Seattle where there is a higher likelihood of a person of color living in that neighborhood, going to that park? And I kind of wanted to jump in, but usually with some of these bloggers, you just kind of stay away because they're insane. I've mostly heard from the loudest voices in South Seattle to stop these sweeps. That's what I've heard. I've heard them say in a very loud voice, a unifying voice, stop the sweeps, stop the cleanups. In Ballard, I've heard the opposite. The loudest voice saying, can you please, please, please clean up our camps, make them safe. So the city is actually listening. Maybe that blogger should better understand the issue before talking. By the way, organizers say the concierge program has worked at other city parks like Westlake and Occidental Park. I would position that as a little bit of revisionist history because the parks there are awful and they're completely overrun by homeless people, a lot of whom are clearly dealing with mental health issues. So if that's considered a success, I'm sorry to the folks who live in Ballard. This is not going to be a success story. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Send me a tweet if you'd like. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRantz, JasonRantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So socialism seems to be the ideology du jour for a lot of young people. And it's pushing everyone from Shama Sawant on a local level to AOC on really a national level into power. And it's why the mission of my next guest is so incredibly important. Morgan Zegers is the CEO and founder of Young Americans Against Socialism, YAAS. And she is traveling the entire country to tell the true story of this dangerous ideology. Morgan joins me on the line. Morgan, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Jason. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
So help me understand at least why it seems like so many young people are excited about and inspired by socialism.
Yeah, I mean, so Young Americans Against Socialism, we acknowledge two facts about our generation. First of all, young Americans, a majority of us right now would choose socialism over capitalism for the future of this country. Right. But we also know that millennials and young Americans, 90% of them have a social media account. So first of all, being on social media means you're very much in tune with the issues of the day. And that's great. It's nice that people are involved and are aware of what's going on in the country. The only problem is that they truly, in their hearts, believe that socialism and Marxism and ideas that are rooted in you have something that I don't have, I'm going to use government force to take it from you, that's what they think is going to help our country the best. And in fact, it's going to ruin this country. And so Young Americans Against Socialism is set out to change that and change their perception on this deadly ideology.
How do you change perceptions when, to your point, it's a deeply held belief? They truly believe in their hearts that this is the right position for this country. That can't be an easy thing to defeat.
Exactly. And so we understand there was something that went wrong in the American classroom if students are coming out and not understanding that socialism has failed every time. And more importantly, how and why socialist leaders come to power. That's the real kicker here. They promise some really great things, and the promises lead to very, very different results. That's what they're not grasping. And so an American student should go through our U.S. education system and fully understand that socialism is bad and leads to awful things, but they were not taught that. And what's worse is that American far-left politicians, like the Democratic Socialists, a.k.a. just regular socialists, they are preying on the idea that our generation doesn't know this. They're preying on the idea, and they're using it to their advantage. And that's why they're promising these great things, and my generation is eating it up. They're like, oh, sweet. You know, I want to cancel my student debt. I made this decision for myself. But, you know, instead of fixing really expensive college prices, let's make somebody else just pay for it. And so there's just a really misconception of priorities here.
So then is the intent to go after the person who's already holding this deeply held belief about socialism, or is it about going with the generation that's younger than them?
So what we're doing is targeting average Americans who may not be very involved in politics, but they're on social media, so they're seeing AOC go viral all the time and talking about how capitalism is bad. They're seeing Bernie Sanders post that, you know, you're not free unless you don't have to pay student loans. You're not free if you have to pay expensive healthcare bills. Are you really free if you have to pay for things in your life? And what they do, there's this book, The Road to Serfdom, and they talk about how socialists throughout history have come to power by changing definitions of words. And so that's what we have today. We have Bernie Sanders telling our generation on Twitter, you know, you're not free because you have to pay for the things in your life. You should definitely give us the power, and then your life will be so much better. Then you'll be free. They have changed what free really means. And then that's why exactly they call themselves democratic socialists. It's this misconception of basic words that we have always loved and used in the United States.
Morgan Zegers is on the line. She's the founder of Young Americans Against Socialism. YAAS.org is the website to learn more about this movement. Do you think President Trump is harming or helping this message? Because on the one hand, you know, I think you can probably make a very clear case against what socialism is if you didn't have a president that younger people, regardless of their ideology, tend to not necessarily gravitate towards.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see both sides of it. I mean, Young Americans Against Socialism is nonpartisan. We're a 501c3 educational nonprofit. On one side, when I saw President Trump in his speech say the United States of America or America will never be a socialist country, I was glad that we finally had a strong American leader calling out that the socialism is rising in our country. I mean, it's been kind of under the rug and pushed under the rug, the fact that it's been so much support for it from my generation especially. But on the other hand, he does turn off a lot of young people, and it kind of opens up the opportunity for Bernie Sanders and for far left politicians who are, you know, more likable, you could say, to them. It opens the door for them.
So then how do you overcome that? Because ultimately, what's the goal as far as the timeline is concerned on reminding people how dangerous socialism is? Because we, in theory, only have a few months left to potentially stop someone like a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren becoming president.
Exactly. And it's very scary. And there's that saying that freedom is only one generation away from being lost. It couldn't be more true than right now. And it's very scary in one way. But I would love to be able to tell you right now, hey, we're going to deal a swift death blow to socialism in this country, but that's just not the case. This is really an institutional problem. And it's been ingrained into many generations of Americans who haven't personally experienced, you know, the Red Scare. We didn't personally experience Fayette Page. We didn't personally experience Castro coming to the United States after the Cuban Revolution and telling the world and the U.S. press and President Nixon that he was a democratic humanitarian. So we didn't experience that firsthand. And so now we're going to try and rewrite that. We're going to try and fix that narrative. That's why we travel the country interviewing people who have escaped the real hell, because they're going to show our generation, listen, it's not what you think it is.
Well, there's a lot of great videos and information online. Again, the website is yaas.org, Young Americans Against Socialism. It's a message we can very easily and clearly get behind. Morgan, we wish you the absolute best of luck. Again, yaas.org. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Jason. And if anyone's interested in supporting, please donate at our website.
Again, it's yaas.org. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So KEPR and Como report a 58-year-old Walla Walla dude was arrested after police say he harassed cops by blowing on a trumpet and driving in circles, then later leading them on a chase and then biting the cop.
That's the worst.
I'm not going to lie and not say it sounds kind of fun, minus the biting part, unless you're into that sort of stuff, I guess. It happened on Saturday. Thomas F. Franco allegedly started harassing an officer who was making an arrest. And at that time, the driver, this guy, Franco, was driving his car in a circle around the cop. I don't know why the cop didn't arrest him then and there, but said, dude, you got to stop or I'm going to arrest you. So he stopped. Cut to several hours later, something around 10 o'clock in the evening, they get a call about this guy yelling and acting violently, they say, towards elderly people in a neighborhood. By the way, he's a repeat offender. This is according to the story. He was just out of jail awaiting sentencing for a previous crime. So it's good to know that his life is getting on the right track. So cops end up showing up as he's harassing these elderly people. He then goes into his car and goes on a chase. He drives away. He flees from the cops, who go ahead and chase him. Franco rams his car into the driver's side of a parked patrol car that was waiting to try to get to this guy. After that happened, he then loses control of the car and then hits a chain link fence. Then they say as officers pulled in behind him, Franco reversed the car and rammed into the front end of a patrol vehicle, injuring a second cop, according to Walla Walla police. Officers used a taser on Franco, handcuffed him, and took him into custody. As an officer was leading him into a patrol car, Franco bit the cop.
What a story. What a whirlwind of emotion. A lot of people use music as an outlet to sway them from, you know, getting into trouble on the streets. This guy seemed to enhance that urge.
Well, he was playing the music.
Right. He was playing
You're assuming
the trumpet
was what Because I don't know how the trumpet gets involved. Like, where did the trumpet come from? Yeah. Is he a trumpet player? Was he playing an actual tune, or did he just find a trumpet and start blowing on it?
I hope.
And where does one find a trumpet that's just kind of laying around?
I hope he was applying the sound effects for the chase.
That one's better. That's where I thought you were going, but you went to womp womp.
Well, once he gets caught.
Womp womp?
I can't make the sound. It's the womp womp.
That wasn't good.
Well, I know it's not a good sound.
It wasn't even.
Well, you do better.
I'm criticizing the idea. I was actually thinking the during the chase.
Oh, after I say it, you were
no, but you didn't. You said the bad one first, which prevented me from using the good example, and then you took the good example because that you saw my reaction to your bad example.
No, I think you're just saying it was your idea.
It was a fail. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Democrats spent the weekend in Iowa trying to be more progressive than their counterpart, all while the White House announced a new plan on legal immigration that gives us a lot of stuff to talk about with our next guest, Elizabeth Harrington. She's the national spokesperson for the GOP. Liz, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I want to start with Beto O'Rourke because he's been making some headlines for two separate reasons. We're going to start... Let's talk about his belief that gun owners should get licenses. Obviously, when we have these conversations, gun owners understand why that's not a good idea. And yet people who maybe find themselves on the fence wonder if it is. So what's your response to his plan?
Well, this is something that we've heard from a lot of Democrats. Cory Booker came out with this as well. And it's a big government solution to a problem that wouldn't actually fix the problem. And it really, I don't think it's constitutional either, because it really makes gun owners out to be some sort of criminals just by, you know, wanting to exercise your Second Amendment rights. It puts you through a huge legal loops and hoops that you have to jump through, and you have to get fingerprinted in order to exercise your Second Amendment rights. So we don't think that is a solution to a problem that's not even – they demonize the NRA. They demonize gun owners who are legally exercising their constitutional rights, and that's not the problem. The problem is a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. The problem is failures within our system already. When you have a Dayton, Ohio shooter who was kicked out of high school for having a kill list, and yet that didn't show up in his background check. Those are the problems. It's not legal, law-abiding citizens who are exercising their Second Amendment rights.
There was something that Essie Cupp said over the weekend that actually caught my attention, and she was basically making the point that we need to get a little bit more emotional on this. And you know, when we're talking about rights, I certainly don't think we should get emotional. I think we got to take emotion out of it because then we act a little unreasonably. But are Republicans not acting emotionally enough when it comes to some of these tragedies?
I don't think so. I think the president showed a very, presidential tone in this. He was upset. He was angered, as we all are. It's senseless violence that, in a lot of cases, could be prevented if we had some common sense measures in place. But I don't think we need to just take away guns. When you look at Beto O'Rourke, what he's also calling for is a mandatory buyback program. That is a nice way of saying we're going to take your guns.
Yeah, it's confiscation.
That's a confiscation. And so that is so extreme. And when you want to talk about preventing violence, how do you think that goes over? When you have hundreds of millions of Americans who legally own guns and follow the law to come in and confiscate them, that is a recipe for disaster. So I don't think Republicans are flippant about this. If anything, I think what we've seen, the Democrats have had a completely unhinged response mm-hmm. to these evil acts over the past that occurred last week. I mean, for the Democrats to explicitly blame the president for El Paso when he had nothing to do with it, and blame it on political rhetoric. And then in the same breath, they're ratcheting up their own political rhetoric to 11. They're calling the president a Nazi. They're calling him a white supremacist. Completely unhinged response. And they're blasting thoughts and prayers. Pete Buttigieg's gun control plan. He opens it up. He's supposed to be the religious Democrat in the race, and he opens up his plan by saying, too many leaders just say thoughts and prayers, and that's not enough. They belittle religion. They belittle law-abiding gun owners. You know, we've seen this for decades, really. We've seen this for years with Barack Obama saying that we cling to God and guns and our guns and religion. And that is divisive, and that's not what we need. We need a time of healing. And the president was very clear, and he called for unity, and he condemned evil, and he condemned white supremacy. And the Democrats are just ratcheting up division with smears and lies. Again, going back to Charlottesville, it is just so irresponsible, and especially since they're blaming political rhetoric for violence, they need to look at their own political rhetoric.
Liz Harrington is the national spokesperson for the GOP. We're talking about the election, of course, and it's coming up where the Democrats are eventually going to have to pick someone. And it certainly seems, Liz, that there are three, four, maybe five who seem at least right now viable. What are the polls missing, in your opinion? Because, you know, I know that the Trump campaign wants to push back on polling being wrong with him in mind, and it certainly was back when he originally ran. But the polls still show that Biden and Sanders have an edge over Trump. So what do you think is missing still? Did they not learn the lesson of a few years ago?
Well, I still don't think they've learned the lesson of 2016. Kamala Harris was asked by Chuck Todd over the weekend in an interview on for Meet the Press, and he said, oh, they looked in the mirror after 2016, and what did she find? Russia. So she didn't look in the mirror at all. And I think that the question kind of goes back to what we were just talking about. When you have an entire media establishment and you have an entire political party calling half the country racist and hateful and white supremacist just because they support a duly elected president of the United States, do you think they're that comfortable telling a pollster that they support this president? I mean, we're really seeing deplorables on steroids by the Democrats and the media. They're attacking half the country. They're attacking people just because they support this president. Look what Julian Castro's brother, Joaquin Castro, did to just people that exercised their First Amendment right, donated to the Donald Trump campaign, and they want to dox them and expose them and shame them for the sin of supporting a duly elected president. So I think there is a chilling effect when you look at these polls. Obviously, the metrics aren't very good. All of their turnout models were wrong in 2016. I still don't think they've found the solution to how to poll this president's support. And I don't think it helps when you have the media and the Democrats continue to demonize just people that love this country and want to support Donald J. Trump. And so I think that is a chilling effect. And they were wrong in 2016, and they're going to be wrong again in 2020.
VP Biden had another pretty significant gaffe over the week. And he said that, you know, he had met when he was the vice president with survivors from Stoneman Douglas. Of course, that did not happen. Is that just misspeaking, or are you comfortable at this point? Because it's always been tricky, especially when the president, in President Trump's case, he's also an older gentleman. You know, where do Republicans draw the line in what they're willing to go and say this person might be a little bit too old for office versus we kind of understand you're on the campaign trail 24/7. It's stressful. You're going to forget or you're going to misspeak.
Well, the problem for Biden is he's not on the campaign trail 24/7. He's hardly on the campaign trail. And look, voters can have to make up their own mind. And when you see Joe Biden is getting up there, and he's been around, he's been in the swamp for 44 years, and it shows. But he's always been this way. He's always I don't even like to call them gaffes anymore. He's constantly telling us who exactly he is, because he also had a statement about poor kids being quote-unquote just as bright as white kids. And, you know, they're saying he just misspoke, but this is a long pattern for him. The comments he made about Barack Obama being the first articulate, quote, clean mainstream African-American, he got hammered for that at the time, but that was years ago. And then they say, oh, well, it's just Joe being Joe, and the media bends over backwards giving him a pass, but it's not. And he bragged about Delaware being a slave-owning state. He bragged about Delaware fighting for the South Side in the Civil War. He bragged about working with segregationists in his own party, the Democratic Party. This is a pattern for him. And so I don't think we should give him a pass. I don't think voters are going to give him a pass. And I think voters know who this guy is. And they also see just he doesn't really have the stamina anymore. And there's quite a difference, even if President Trump is a few years younger. He looks miles and miles younger than Joe Biden does. And Bernie Sanders as well. Bernie Sanders is up there, but he doesn't kind of face the same questions as Joe Biden does.
No, he doesn't. Bernie Sanders, say what you will about his crazy ideas, he does come off as someone who's got a lot of energy. But you know what? We're still early on in the campaigning, and he hasn't actually advanced to a general election campaign last time around. So we don't know what's going to go on with Bernie Sanders. But we do know that President Trump seems to have some supernatural ability to always seem incredibly energetic. And me at 37 years old doing a show from 3 to 6 in the afternoon, I'm like, I'm so tired. I'm talking with Liz Harrington.
He works all the time.
I know. It's insane. As do you. You're tweeting up a storm all the time, and you're coming up on our show all the time. As always, Liz Harrington, I really, really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. Send us a text, 1-800-465-8770. It's the Numbetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rancho. The film The Hunt was canceled thanks to reaction from both sides of the political aisle about this particular movie. Any reaction from the right is absolutely absurd. It should be shamed. It should be condemned, including, by the way, the reaction President Trump had to this movie, even though he didn't name it. Art is art. Whether you like the art or not, art is art. You can criticize art. Go for it. But to censor it, to get it pulled, is absolutely absurd, especially when it's satire. And when people don't realize, in this case, is this satire actually was meant to make the left look bad. This is a movie about liberal elites killing deplorables because, based upon their own ideology, they don't view members of the right as human beings.
We pay for everything. So this country belongs to us.
It's just business. Hunting human beings for sport.
They're not human beings.
Every year, a bunch of elites kidnap
liberal elites.
Folk like us. Where'd they get you from?
Wyoming.
Mississippi.
Orlando. And hunt us for sport. Hurry, hurry, hurry up.
It's true.
We're being hunted.
So let me ask you guys real quick. Does that make the liberal elites who are the hunters look like bad people or good people? Probably bad people, right? This was a satire that the right should have gotten behind. But let's say it wasn't about that. Let's push that aside for a moment. Let's push all the content aside. It is hypocritical for anyone on the right. Anyone on the right who gets mad at calls of boycott of Tucker Carlson, of Laura Ingraham, of Sean Hannity, of this show, anyone who calls out the left for their boycotts, to then celebrate this is absurd. And let's be very clear about certain parts of the Republican Party that drive me absolutely nuts is this kind of hypocrisy when it comes to content, when it comes to art that some believe goes too far, sends the wrong message. If you do not like the message of a movie, do not go. If you don't like the message of a TV show, do not watch. If you don't like the message of a radio show, do not listen. It's really that simple. And unfortunately, even though I think the times have changed a little bit, you have groups like the Parents Television Council, which is insane. They don't like morally some of the content on a TV show or a movie, so they call for boycotts. I remember them very distinctly going after the TV show Glee. It's like, oh, they have gay characters on Glee, so we got to pull them from TV. No, that's not what the right should be about. The right is about the freedom of expression, including to express positions we do not like. Why? Because we understand the importance of the First Amendment, because we don't let our feelings get in the way of protected speech, because we know that society is better off when we shine a spotlight on bad ideas rather than silence them. We believe sunlight is a great disinfectant. We believe the marketplace of ideas only exists if it has a marketplace of ideas, not just select ideas. I use the quote on the show all the time. Imagine the power to censor in the hands of your worst enemy. Now, we've seen that kind of censorship and the attacks that the left will go to when it comes to, say, Fox News and Tucker Carlson show. We don't like that. We get mad when that happens. We get outraged when that happens. So I don't know how anyone can sit there and not be outraged by the fact that this movie was canceled. Now, it was canceled because of the outrage. This wasn't canceled because purely of the bad optics of this, because they could have just as easily put this movie out 3 months from now and separate itself a little bit from the mass shootings over the past, over last weekend or 2 weekends ago. They could have just simply postponed. They didn't. They canceled. Universal Pictures put out a statement that said, while we had already paused the marketing campaign for The Hunt, after thoughtful consideration, the studio has decided to cancel our plans to release the film. We stand by our filmmakers and will continue to develop to distribute films in partnership with bold and visionary creators like those associated with this satirical social thriller, but we understand that now is not the right time to release the film. That's not canceling. Or that is canceling. That's not postponing. This whole idea is now is not the right time. This is canceling art. That's wrong. Please, please, please stand up to censorship in all forms. Because the second you get that win, the second you celebrate that win, is the second you become a giant hypocrite when you decide to scream out about what Media Matters is doing. When you decide to scream at the top of your lungs about how unfair it is that leftists in the media will go after their critics. That these organizations, not just like Media Matters, but all of them, all of these different moms groups on the left, will silence conservative thought. Do not contribute to that. Do not contribute to a society that is okay with that kind of censorship. That's wrong. I really do appreciate you tuning in. Don't forget, if you missed any moment of the show or you want to relive an interview, maybe share an interview, subscribe to the podcast. You can go on KTTH.com. You can search your phone's app store, your podcast, wherever you download podcasts. Just search for The Jason Rancho. Or, of course, you can just text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword podcast to 1-800-465-8770. You've been listening to The Jason Rancho. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.